Hello everyone. My name is Mohsen and I'm going to talk to you about what we have recently been doing to support asynchronous I/O in SGX enclaves. Over the past few years, we have been developing a Rust platform for writing code that runs in SGX enclaves. This Enclave Development Platform, or EDP, is available as open source software and we have been using it at Fortanix as the backbone of multiple security-oriented products. Producing SGX Enclave has never been easier. All you need to do is compile your Rust code for the Fortanix SGX target, as you can see here. This will produce an Enclave that can be run with our ready-to-use Enclave runner or a custom Enclave runner of your choosing if you need special user space extensions. EDP is purposefully designed for network services, and that allows us to limit the API surface needed from untrusted user space component. We have only 16 user calls in EDP, which is a very small subset of what's needed to support a general purpose application framework. For example, Linux has hundreds of system calls and there are enclave platforms that expose all or a significant portion of those system calls to the enclave. A significant source of performance overhead in SGX is context switching. The example shown here compares the time it takes to do a single system call in Linux versus a single user call in EDP. And as you can see, there is a very significant difference. So to improve performance, we simply need to avoid context switching as much as possible. In a network service where there are many concurrently running threads, the operating system needs to switch between the threads so they can all access the CPU. In EDP, the Enclave runner can have a smaller number of threads than the Enclave itself, and yet service all the Enclave threads. We have implemented this M2N threading model in EDP's Enclave runner to reduce the cost of OS context switching. But what about SGX context switches? There are some published academic work on this. The first paper listed here uses shared memory buffers to send e-calls and o-calls between the enclave and the user space instead of SGX context switching. There's also a busy wait algorithm to optimize performance when there are many consecutive e-calls and o-calls. The second paper takes a different approach. They implement M2N threading inside the enclave. We have implemented an approach similar to the first paper for EDP and integrated that into Rust's async IO system. This makes it possible to compile code written in Rust using the async await syntax with EDP and leverage the performance benefits of fewer context switches as well. Now let's briefly talk about async IO in Rust. Rust provides an interface called future, which represents any computation that will finish at some point and produce an output. In order to make progress on a future, you need to have a runtime component that pulls the future. When pulled, the future either returns pending, in which case the future will be pulled again once it can make progress, or it returns ready with an output value. This is a very powerful abstraction because it allows a single thread to pull hundreds or even thousands of futures and drive them to completion. But how would you actually implement the future trait? Well, fortunately, in most cases, you don't need to explicitly implement the future trait. Rust provides a syntax that allows a programmer to write code that is very similar to non-async code. The syntax consists of async code blocks and functions and the await keyword, which is applied to values that implement the future trait to get their output value. This example code shows how you might write code that uses async await syntax. As you can see, it looks very similar to something you might normally write, except for the async await keywords. At compile time, Rust will desugar this function into a type that implements the future trait. This process in itself is a very interesting topic, but it has been discussed extensively elsewhere, so I won't go into the details of how the compiler transforms your code. Note that when writing async code, you should not use types that block the current thread. For example, the TCP stream type provided in Rust's standard library does not support async IO. However, there are Rust libraries that provide a version of these fundamental types that can work asynchronously. One such library is Tokio, and I'll talk more about Tokio later on. All right, let's get back to EDP and see what it takes to be able to compile and run async IO code in EDP enclaves. First, we need to talk about how we perform blocking IO in EDP enclaves. When an enclave needs to do IO, say read from a TCP socket, it cannot directly call the read system call because all interactions with the operating system have to go through the user space component. This is a fundamental restriction imposed by Intel SGX. So instead, the enclave would perform an enclave exit to switch execution context to the user space and request to perform the IO operation. This is what we call a user call. The user space then in turn calls the appropriate system call and returns the results back to the enclave by doing another context switch to enter the enclave. So there are four context switches to satisfy a single IO operation in the traditional blocking IO model. As we established earlier, these context switches are expensive, and we should try to minimize the context switches as much as possible. The solution we have implemented for EDP is to use FIFO queues shared between the enclave and the user space to send user calls and return values. When the enclave wants to perform a user call, it sends a user call descriptor through a shared memory FIFO queue. At this point, the enclave can continue execution and do other useful work instead of blocking for the results. The enclave runner, which is the user space component in charge of handling user space user calls sent by the enclave, will receive the user call through the queue, performs the requested user call, and then sends back the results to the enclave through a separate FIFO queue. So in addition to avoiding SGX context switching, this model also enables us to perform asynchronous IO. The enclave submits an IO call without blocking for the results and is notified once the results are ready. This is similar to IO completion ports in Microsoft Windows. Now, if you recall, I mentioned a Rust library called Tokio, which provides fundamental types that can be used in async Rust programs. Tokio uses another library called MIO. MIO is essentially a thin abstraction layer over the EPOL API, which is available in Linux and many other similar operating systems. So in order to get Tokio to compile in EDP, we had to port MIO to EDP. Let's see how we did that. EPOL is an API that is used to monitor multiple file descriptors to see if it's possible to perform IO operations on any of them. Once a file descriptor is ready for IO, EPOL generates a readiness event so the application can actually try to perform the IO operation. Now, as you can imagine, this is different from the IO completion model we have designed for EDP, so the challenge was to bridge the gap between these models. Fortunately, this was already done when MIO was first ported to Windows, and we used a similar approach. It's interesting to note that the current MIO implementation for Windows has somewhat moved away from the IO completion ports, since people have found hidden Windows APIs that provide readiness events. They did this to improve performance because using IO completion ports requires copying buffers in order to be correct with respect to Rust's lifetimes and borrow checking system. However, for EDP, we need to copy buffers to user space memory in any implementation, because the enclave memory is encrypted and cannot be accessed by user space. That's why we have opted to use this model, which also alleviates the SGX context switching overhead. I thought it might be interesting to elaborate more on how we actually translate the I/O completion model to I/O readiness model. Let's consider the case of reading from a TCP socket. On the left side, you can see how EPOL can be used to read from a socket. Once the socket is connected, it cannot be read until a read readiness event is generated by EPOL. Once the socket is ready, the program can call read to read bytes from the socket. Once all the available bytes have been read, the read call will return an error to indicate that there are no more bytes available